Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the middle of Ayin Hey Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is familiar to us because we quoted it back on Ayin Bet. The Mishnah begins, Homer Ishto, Kol Nidarim, Shitaduri Mikan, Ad Shavo, Mimakom Ploni. Any neder that you take from Mikan normally means Me'achshav, from now. But in this instance, Daran points out, and he pointed it out back on Ayin Bet as well, is that the word Mikan means from the location that I leave. Mikan meaning the place, Ad Shavo Mimakom Ploni, until I return from such a location. Meaning that he is premising the Hakamata Neder on his travels, because he knows he's leaving town, and knowing that he's going to leave town, he now is saying to her, once I leave town, until I return to town, this will be true. So he's using the trigger as his traveling and not exactly a time. Therefore, the Mikan, Va'ad Shavo Mimakom Ploni, designates the framework of the Hakama that he's trying to put in place, which is while he is traveling. Meaning until the time that he travels, he can still do Hakama or Hafara. This is going to take over once he leaves town. Harein Kayamin, he says that all Nidarim that you take, my wife, will be Mikuyamim Lo Amar Klum. He fails to do anything. It does not work whatsoever. Now, there are different reasons brought. We discussed this back on Ayin Bet. Once again, over here, the Rishonim bring down the different reasons. Rashi says over here, the reason that it fails is because it's Nadarim, Shelo Ba'u Le'olam, Eino Yochol Likayem. You can't be Mikayem things that don't exist. If the Neder doesn't exist, how are you Mikayem a Neder that doesn't exist? And the failure is here is that this is Shelo Ba'u Le'olam. On the other hand, the Rosh, similar to his Shita back on Ayin Bet, says that the problem here is that it's a kiyum bita'ut. It's a kiyum that can have underlying failure in it because the husband has no idea what his wife is going to say. And it's very possible that she will take nidarim or say things that he will not approve of. And therefore, when he puts a blanket kiyum in place, there is a high likelihood that that kiyum would not be what he wants and that he would not want to be mikayim many of these nidarim. So because of that, we say that it's a kiyum bita'ut, and it fails because the kiyum is not really what he wants to do. He really needs to know the information before he mikayem otam. Since he doesn't have that information, his kiyum, or the underlying premise of his kiyum, is mistaken because he can't succeed at being mikayem things that he doesn't know or things that possibly will offend him, affront him, or be things that he does not want to be mikayem. The Ran here brings a third possibility or third shita as to why that is the case that the kiyum fails, and that's based on the next piece in the Mishnah. So we'll read the next piece in the Mishnah, and then we can understand what the Ran says. On the other hand, harehen mufarin. On the other hand, if he says that all the nidarim in that period of travel will be mufarin, he preemptively is nullifying all of his wife's nidarim. Rabbi Lezer omar mufar, that it works, that he's able to nullify them in advance. Chumim umim. Eino mufar. On the other hand, the Chachamim say that it fails, you cannot be made for the Nidarim. Now, Rabbi Eliezer explains his position. I'm Rabbi Eliezer. Im afer Nidarim shebaul dichlal isur. If he's successful or able to be made fair, nullify Nidarim that are already in place, lo yafer Nidarim shelo baul dichlal isur. Certainly, he should be able to preemptively nullify Nidarim that have yet to come into effect. So if Hafara works for the husband when the neder is already in place, then certainly he can stop the neder from coming into force. And that's the kal v'chomer that Rabbi Eliezer puts in place. So now going back, this is how the Ran explains why by kiyum it doesn't work. Because this kal v'chomer doesn't work by kiyum. The whole premise of Rabbi Eliezer's shito is that Hafara works when the neder is already in place, then certainly it should work before the neder is in place. You can't make that same kal v'chomer with regards to the kiyuma neder. By the kiyuma neder, just because the husband can be mikayim the neder when it's already in place, that doesn't mean that he should be able to be mikayim the neder before it's in place. Because that's a weaker side. That's not a kal v'chomer, it's the other way around. That's a chomer to a kal. And therefore, since the kal v'chomer fails, then there's no way to say that the kiyum should work beforehand. And that's the way that the Ran explains it. The Rosh seems to bring a shita from Elezer Mitz, which is not so clear in the Rosh, but that might be what he's speaking about, and the Ran might be explaining that Shita of the Rabbi Lezer Mimit. So those are the three reasons we saw why Kiyum, according to everybody, doesn't work, either because of the Vashalo Badi Ulam, according to Rashi, or according to the Rosh, it's a neder, it's a kiyum ta'ut. And according to the Ran, it's a problem or a failure of the Kal V'chomer. The only reason it works by Hafara is because of this Kal V'chomer. That Kal V'chomer doesn't work by kiyum, or actually works just in the opposite direction. It doesn't work. It would provide you to say just the opposite and not what we would want. Now, as far as the Chachamim are concerned, they say that it fails, and the Chachamim explain their position and rule out. Haru Omer, the Pasuk says, Isha Yikimeno, Isha Yifereno, Etche Baal Lichlal Hakeim, Baal Lichlal Hafer, Lo Baal Lichlal Hakeim, Lo Baal Lichlal Hafer. So the Chachamim say that there is a Hekesh that's drawn between Hakamata Neder and Hafarata Neder, because in the Pasuk it says, Isha Yikimeno, Isha Yifereno. So therefore, Kiyum and Hafara are connected. We mentioned this back in the Gemara 9 Bet, that you have to ask that question theoretically, what is the connection between Hafara and Hakama, and how does that influence each other? I mean, the ability to do Hafara or do Hakama, how much does that influence the other side? And here you see things that resonate from what we said by Yibum, that Kol Haba Lidei Yibum, Ba Lidei Chalitza, Kol Haba Lidei Chalitza, Ba Lidei Yibum, meaning that the two are inextricably connected, so that only if you can do Yibum, can you do Chalitza. Only if you can do Chalitza, can you do Yibum. They both have to be the options in place in order to do that. And so here, they say a similar thing with regards to Nidarim, that Hakama and Hafara function together. And therefore, since over here we know that by Hakama, he can't preemptively do the Kiyum, for whatever the reasons are, we gave the different reasons according to everyone, therefore, so too by Hafara, you can't do the Hafara. Because the Hekesh says, whatever is true by Hakama is also true by Hafara. Now you could ask the question, why not just say the opposite? That if there's a Hekesh between Hafara and Hakama, maybe you should say the opposite. Because it succeeds by Hafara, like Rabbi Eliezer says, maybe it should also succeed by Hakama. So some of the Achronim point out that generally we have a principle that Mekishin l'chumra v'ein Mekishin l'kula. Whenever we have a Hekesh, we are Mekish l'chumra and not l'kula, because we have to assume that you have the lesser of the chidushim. Whenever the Torah gives us a limud, we have to assume that the limud's there to give us the least chidush, unless it explains otherwise. Over here, the least chidush is to say that we'll go to chumrah, and therefore we'll follow hakama. Like hakama fails, so too hafara fails preemptively, and not say that just like hafara works preemptively according to Rabbi Eliezer, so too hakama will work preemptively. In truth, for all these shitot that say that hakama fails, then Hafara just becomes the opposite side of Hakama. You can see that in Rashi, which is Ech lo ba lichlal hakeim, shadayin lo ba'u li'olam, so too by Hafara, the same thing. Enu ba lichlal hafer, because it's lo ba li'olam. It doesn't exist. Since the nether doesn't exist, you can't be mafer, you can't nullify something that doesn't exist. So that's how Rashi will view it. Rashi will view just like there's a failure in the Hakama because the nether doesn't exist, so too, there's a failure in the Hafara because the nether doesn't exist. The Rosh will say, similar to what he says by Hakama, since it's a Hakama b'taut, the same will be true by Hafara. This will also be gauged or determined to be a Hafara b'taut because you don't have the information. And as opposed to Hakama, which only takes place in the future when the nether comes into effect, Hafara, once put in place, cannot be removed or cannot be changed. We discussed that back on Ayin Bet. That the Ran over there explained why he went through a proxy and used an apitropus and didn't do it himself, because once he puts the Hafara in place, he cannot back out of the Hafara. So if at the moment, preemptively, he wants to put the Hafara in place, that means that the Hafara is effective at that moment. The problem is, he doesn't know what is being made fair. And that failure to know what is going to be made fair makes it into a Hafara b'taut. And so too, just like you have a Hakama b'taut, there, because you don't know what you're being making, and you might be making something b'taut in the future. Now here also, you will have a hafara b'taut. For the same reason that you don't know about it in the future, it's not because it matters what it is in the future, it's just at this moment when the hafara is trying to be effective, you don't know what you're trying to be made fair. That's an integral failure in the hafara. A hafara without knowledge is just not a hafara. And so, it also will be deemed to be a hafara b'taut. And again, for the Ran, you're going to have to say that the Kal V'chomer fails by the Hakama, and despite the fact that the Kal V'chomer works by the Hafara, nevertheless, because of the Hekesh, it's going to override and say that despite the Kal V'chomer by Hafara, Hakama governs over here, and since Hakama governs, therefore, it also will be determinant for the Hafara, and say that the Kal V'chomer will not be exercised by the Hafara. Now, as we mentioned back in Ayin Bet, with regards to the Chachamim's position, it seems that they believe that if the neder is already in effect, but he has not, the Baal has yet to hear about it, that he could be made fair preemptively for the fact that he would hear about it later. There is a question if the woman took a neder that had its nai embedded in it, and therefore the Maisa neder has already taken place, but the Chaluta neder will only take place once the tnai comes into effect, whether the Chachamim also would agree over there that the Hafara preemptively of the husband works over here. The Meiri over here claims that the Chachamim, even in that case, would agree that you can't be made fair preemptively because the neder is already in the world. It already exists. And since it exists, therefore we have the ability to be preemptively made fair such a neder. All right, so that's the Mishnah. Now the Gemara asks, Ibailuhu, li Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, who is Doresh the Kal V'Chomer and says that you can't preemptively do a Hafara, how does that function? Meichal Chalin u'betelin. Does the neder go into effect, and then we have a hafara? O dilma lo chalin klal. Or maybe it's preemptively works to the fact that the neder doesn't take effect whatsoever. So the question here is the nature of how the hafara works when you do it preemptively. We know that if you do it prospectively, which is once the woman's already taken the neder, and then the husband is made fair the neder that his wife took, in the Gemara in Nazir, the Gemara on Samach Bet will ask whether that is prospectively or retroactively. But we, Paskin, and the conclusion of the Gemara is that it's Migas Gais. The husband only prospectively cuts off the neder. So in that case, we know that the neder went into effect. And then prospectively, the husband cuts the neder going forward. The question here is when he preemptively does the hafara, the nullification, how does that impact on the neder? Does that work the same way it works when the neder is already in effect, which means that the neder goes into effect and then he nullifies it? So it happens momentarily, it goes into effect, and then he nullifies it. In the case where the neder was already in place, more time elapsed, but he does nullifying it. Or, because over here he nullifies it preemptively, does he undermine the neder's ability to take effect whatsoever? The Gemara will ask in 1 second, the Mayin Nafka Mina. Rav Soloveitchik and the Rishimot Shiurim wants to explain this distinction in the following manner. To say that the neder is comprised of two parts. There is the maaseh ha-neder, there is the action of taking the neder, and then there is the isurim that are generated by the neder. And the question of the Gemara is, what does hafara attack? Does hafara attack the maaseh ha-neder? Does it take away the action, the ability to take the neder? Or does the hafara just negate the isurim of the neder? The maaseh ha-neder happens. It's just that this eliminates the isurim of the neder. And that'll be the difference here in these opinions. If you say that the Maisa Neder is in effect, but the Hafara just negates or mitigates against the Isurim, then the Neder went into effect, just there are no Isurim associated with it. On the other hand, if you believe that the Hafara wipes out the Maisa Neder completely, then the Neder is never in effect. It never goes into effect. And that is the Tutzadim over here. And he points out that the Tosafot in Nazir and Dach Samech Bet actually says something interesting. He says that despite the fact that the Gemara there is trying to determine whether Hafarat Nedarim is Migas Gais, is prospective, or is it Oker Miikara, is it retroactive, nevertheless, in both cases, the Neder is Chal. Tosafot says something interesting. As opposed to by Hatarat Nedarim, which we know works, Limafreya works retroactively, and is Oker the Neder Miikara, as if it never existed, Tosafot over there claims that Hafara works in such a manner, whether it works prospectively or whether it works retroactively, the Maisa Neder is always in place. It's just a question of wiping out the Yisurim. So you see that from Tosafot over there, that he sees within the Hafara this ability to wipe out the Yisurim, but not the Maisa Neder. And that's even if you were to say that it works retroactively. The truth is that Tosafot is interesting, but it may not be applicable to us. Because over there, the case is a case where they're doing the hafara after the neder is already in place. So once the neder is in place, we know the maisa neder happened. The question, okay, retroactively, maybe it does or doesn't wipe out the maisa neder. Over here, where the hafara is preemptive, maybe even Tosafot would agree that it could wipe out the maisa neder. So that's the two tzadim that we're trying to figure out here. Gemara wants to know the mai nafka mina. What's the difference? Kagon the atpis achrina b'hadein nidra. If someone else used her neder in order to generate their neder. So for instance, if she says, Hareini Nazira, she makes herself into a Nazir, and then someone else who hears it says, Vani, then I also want to be a Nazir. So they're using her neder, her neder Nizirut, to generate their neder. So now the difference will be, if, and we'll use Rav Soloveitchik's formulation, if there is no Maisa neder, then the neder never came into effect whatsoever, and the hadpasa doesn't work at all, because you're being matpis in something that doesn't exist. On the other hand, if the hafara works, that there is a maisa neder, but the isurim are negated, are neutralized by the hafara, then there is a neder here that you can be matpis with. And because of that, that would allow you to have your neder nizirut, even though the woman's neder is mufar. Now again, I'll explain here, the Ran notes it here, I mentioned it back on Ayin Bet, that unlike the case of Hatarat HaChacham, where we saw earlier in the Masechta, when you have a daisy chain of Nidarim, where one person takes a nether, and then another person takes a nether premised on the first nether, connected or mutpas on the first nether, and so on and so forth, if we undermine the first nether, then all the Nidarim fall apart, because they are all connected. That is true by Hatarat HaChacham, because that's Oker Mi'ikaro. That retroactively eliminates the nether. On the other hand, by Hafara, as we're mentioning here, Hafara only works prospectively, and since it works prospectively, if it was true that the nether is chal, and then the hafara acts on it, there will be a moment in time where the hafara is not there, and that will allow the hatpasa to take effect with that piece, because it never gets wiped out retroactively. Now, the Rosh over here brings two formulations as to how the hatpasa would work over here. The Rosh says in the first formulation, Nahi debatle the altar, even though immediately the hafara neutralizes the nether, Hainu b'chdeit yuchal abal omar mufar laichi. That's only within the time frame where it would take the husband to say mufar laichi, which means that when he preemptively does the hafara, the nether takes effect, and then we say his hafara that he said before, it's as if right now, at this moment, he's saying mufar laichi, that it's mufar, and then it'll be mufar. So there's this little window, this 2-second window, where the nether is in effect. U'betoch ze amar va'ani. And in that window of opportunity, the other person said va'ani. In most cases, when you talk about that short a window, it would be crazy. But in this situation, it's not so far-fetched because the woman takes the nether and he right away says va'ani. So when he says it right away, va'ani, that's within the time period before he could say mufar laichi, and it gives him the hatpasa before it gets neutralized by the hafara. That's one way we could say that the hatpasa works over here. The Rosh brings a second way that it works, and the Ran too discusses this methodology as well, which is that it's a case where he says that he wants to be matpis with the nizirut that she took. Now, this raises an issue that we discussed earlier in the Masechta with regards to being matpis in basar shlamim she'achar zrika. If a person is matpis and neder of Isur with Basar Shlamim after Zrikat Adam. After Zrikat Adam, the Basar is Mutar. It's no longer a Davar Hanadur, and therefore it would not work Bahat Pasa. So the Gemara said, you know what the question is? The question is, do we say Batar Mi'ikara, or do we say Batar Dahashto? When a person is Matpis with Basar Shlamim, do we look at the current state of the Shlamim, and his Hat Pasa is in the current state of the Shlamim, or do we go after the original? He is in mind to go after the original state of the Shlamim. And to be matpis the nether when it was originally a davar asur. So which of those two? That's the safek. There the Gemara asked the question. The Gemara seemingly closes over there that it's butter dahashto, that it goes after the current state of the basar shlamim. So both the Rosh and the Ran explain why our case is different than that case over there. The Rosh claims that the case here is different because they specify. He says that I'm matpis mi'ikara. I'm matpis on the origins of her nether. So he specifies over here mi'ikara. And that's why, by stating it specifically that he's connecting to the origins of her neder, that's why the hatpasa works over here. Whereas in the case, in the beginning of the Masechta, over there they just said stam, that he was matpisid in the basar shlamim, doesn't specify whether it's mikara or hashto, and that's why there is a safek of Rami Bar Chama in that situation. On the other hand, Daran sees it the other way around. He sees that there's a difference in the cases over here versus there because of the language that was used over there. So the Rosh says that the difference is the language used over here, that he uses the language of Mi'ikara. On the other hand, the Ran says the language over there was different because he says zeh kazeh, that this is like that. So when you say this is like that, then it's clear that you're trying to be matpis in the object that's there. On the other hand, when you say va'ani, when you say also me, you're not trying to be matpis directly with the object. You're trying to utilize whatever Isur, Davar Asu that she created, and therefore it goes Batar Mi'ikara. As Rav Soloveitchik and the Mishimot Shiurim formulates it in a little more nuanced fashion, which is that the difference is that over there you're using a Chetza, and over here you're using the Maisa Neder. By the case of the Shlamim, you're trying to be Makpis and a Chetza, with an object, a specific object. So over there, when you talk about a specific object, you can talk about the Hashta, you can talk about the here and now, versus the Mi'ikara, because the object existed then and exists now. And when you're trying to be matpisit, it seems that you're trying to do it behashta, you're trying to do it with the current status of the object itself. On the other hand, when you're matpis in the articulation of a nether by a person, you're not being matpis in an hefza, you're being matpis in the maisa ha-nether that they're doing. The maisa ha-nether happened when they took the nether itself. At that moment, the nether was in effect before the hafara took effect. And that's why over here, the hatpasa would work. So again, just to review what the question of the Gemara is. The question of the Gemara is, how does preemptive hafara work according to Rabbi Eliezer? Does it stop the nether from taking effect whatsoever? Or does it allow the nether to take effect and then immediately there's a hafara? The Gemara says the nafkamina is, if someone is matpis in that nether that was taken by the woman. If there is hafara preemptively wipes out the nether, it can never take effect. Then the hatpasa also fails because there's no nether, masa nether for it to connect to. On the other hand, if you say that it takes effect and then is negated or neutralized by the hafara, then you have a moment in time where the nether was effective and you can be matpis in it. How that hatpasa works, the Rosh brought us two possibilities. Either he does that hatpasa at that moment between the taking of the nether and the hafara going to effect, or by nature of either using the word mi'ikar over here, according to the Ran, because you're being matpis in a nether, you are saying it mi'ikara, that you're focused on the origins of the nether. And there was a time when the nether was effective, and therefore your nether would take effect, even though now her nether is being negated. So now the Gemara says, Iyamart Chalin, if you say the nether takes effect, Havit Pisuta, then you could use that to be Matpis to another nether. Iyamart Lo Chalin, if you say it does not take effect, Lo Ika Mashisha, there's no substance to this nether, and the way the Rav formulated it, there's no Maisa Nether to be Matpis with it. Mai, what's the din? Tashma. Let's look at our Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, im hafer nidarim shebau lichlal isur. If he's able to be mefer nidarim that came into the point of isur, meaning that the woman already took the nether, it's in effect already, he can be made for them. Lo yafer nidarim shelo bau lichlal isur. Can't he be made for nidarim that do not come to an isur? Shmamina lo chalin. It sounds like they don't go into effect. Because the way that Rabbi Eliezer describes nidarim, where he preemptively does hafara, is nidarim shlo bau lichlal isur. Nidarim that do not come into an isur. Indicating that he believes if you did hafara in that case, they would never reach the point of isur. Gemara says, miktani she'enan ba'in. It doesn't say in the Mishnah that they never come to be an isur. Shlo bau k'tani. That they have yet to come to an isur. So the word shlo bau is somewhat ambiguous. Shlo bau can mean that they have yet to come to a point. Or shalom bow can also mean that they never will reach that point. So originally the Gemara thought that the shalom bow was means that they'll never reach the point to be sur. The Gemara clarifies the sentence, if you want to say that, then you should have said she'enan bayin. Shalom bow could mean that they have yet to reach it. A dying lo bow. That means that they have yet to reach isur, but they might reach the isur later on. So you have no proof from what Rabbi Eliezer says in the Mishnah. Because of the ambiguity of the term shalom bow, it could be interpreted to mean that they never will come to an Isur, or can be interpreted to mean that they have yet to come to an Isur. Well, if you interpret it to mean that they never will come to Isur, that means they're Lo Chalin. If you interpret it to say that they have yet to come to an Isur, that means that they're Chal, and then Hafara wipes it out. So we have no proof from our Mishnah because of the ambiguity of this Shalobo. Tashma. So let's bring it from a Tosefta, where Rabbi Eliezer states another version of his Kal V'chomer. Amar Lahem Rabbi Eliezer. Umama Makom, Shein mefer nidrei atzmo mishenadar. A person is unable to be matir his nidarim once he's taken a neder. That comes from the pasuk that says lo yachel divaro, that a person may not profane his word. From there we learn out who ainu mechal, he may not profane his words, but someone else acher mechal divaro, but someone else can profane them, and that is the remez, the fact that the chacham can be matir neder. So when it comes to a nether that a person already puts into effect, he took the nether already, he does not have the ability to be matir the nether for himself, although the chacham does have the ability to be matir it for him. On the other hand, Mefer Nidre Atzmo Ad Shelo Yidor, but he can preemptively stop his Nidarim from taking effect. If you remember, that goes back to earlier in the Masechta with the Sugya about Kol Nidre, when we discussed about taking a Tnai or saying a Tnai in the beginning of the year, back on Chav Gimel Amud Bet. There we said that a person can put a Tanai in place at the beginning of the year, which will preempt all Nidarim that he's going to take in the remainder of the year, and he could stop Nidarim from taking effect. So you see here that even though when the Neder is already in effect, he has no power to eliminate that Neder, he still has the power to eliminate that Neder preemptively by saying that I want all Nidarim that I take not to go into effect. So then, Makom, by the case of the Isha, in the case of his wife, where he has the right to nullify the neder even once they are in effect, then certainly he should be able to preemptively stop them from coming into effect. My love, that comparison that he makes now, he's paralleling between the hatarat neder of the husband to the hafarat neder of the wife. My love, di ishto dumya delay, that the hafara of the woman works the same way that his hatarat neder works. Mahu delo chaylin, just like by him, the nedarim never take effect. Meaning that if, first of all, the chacham is matir neder for him, then it's retroactive and it eliminates the neder. If he preemptively takes a statement that says, I want none of my nedarim to take effect, then they don't take effect whatsoever. So too, af ishto nami delo chaylin. So too by his wife, the hafara should work the same way. Now obviously the hafara, while his wife is already taking the neder, that hafara does not work to be oker the neder, but at least preemptively, it should be worked to be oker the neder. Gemara says, lo, hakidita, vahakidita. Each one is working on their own plane. Meaning that the husband's hatarata neder, whether he tries to do it for himself and it fails, when the neder is already in place, or if he preemptively does it and it works, that works to eliminate it, mi ikaro. On the other hand, the woman works on her own plane, which is hafarat neder. Hafarah works prospectively, it does not undermine. So just like when she already took the neder, the hafarah works, so too, preemptively, when he does the hafarah, it will take effect, and then the hafarah will come and neutralize that neder. So you can't prove anything from here, because you could say that they're running on their own track. The Iran over here asks, even if they're running on independent tracks, the nature of the Kal V'Chomer should make it that it does work. Because the Kal V'Chomer says that by the husband who cannot affect his Nidarim once they're in place, can't preemptively affect his Nidarim, the woman where the husband can't be made for the Nidarim once they're in place, he can preemptively eliminate them. Now, if you're to draw that parallel, then they should parallel each other. And if the parallel works, then it should be that just like his Nidarim don't take effect at all, so too, her Nidarim should not take effect at all. And the Ran says, V'nirli, d'lo matzi l'meidan hochi. You can't learn this way. Mishum, the Nidre Atzmo. The reason that it works by Nidre Atzmo is because they are functioning as a Nidre Ta'ut. That basically, there is a mistake that is being made, and the reason for eliminating his Nidarim is because they are Ta'ut. Now, when did the ta'ut happen? The ta'ut can happen in one of two ways. Either once he's taken the neder, he can go to the chacham, and the chacham who does matir the neder, or does it through harata, is matir the neder because basically there was a mistake in the premise of the neder. And that's how he's oker the neder mi'ikaro. So it becomes a neder ta'ut. Similarly, when he takes the preemptive statement to say none of my nedarim will take effect, and he forgets about it, that's what the Gemara qualified back on Chav Gimel and Bet, he forgets about that tonight when he takes the neder, that also, according to the Ran, is deemed to be a neder ta'ut. It's a mistake. Because what's the difference if the regret comes about because the chacham is matir the neder and he finds a petach, or if the fact is that he forgot this tonight that he took, and that made this neder a neder ta'ut. So therefore, the whole reason that his neder never takes effect is because it's nidre ta'ut. You cannot say that by the woman. The woman's hafara does not work because it's a ta'ut. It's not about a mistake. It's the right of the husband to stop or to nullify the neder. And so they're functioning in different ways. Or basically, what the Ran is saying, in other words, is dayo lavo min edin liot kenidon. That when you do a Kal V'Chomer, you can't extend the Kal V'Chomer more than the other side of the Kal V'Chomer. So in the case of the husband, the way it works when he is, gets his hatara by his nether also be the same way it works when he's preemptive. And by the woman, the same thing will be true. Just like the hafara works prospectively when she's taking the nether, so too when you work preemptively, it also work on a prospective basis and not on a basis where it will not allow it to be chal. Now, from this, Rav Soloveitchik notes something very interesting, and he says that, had you asked us in the abstract, how does the t'nai of kol nidre work, we would have said it was nidre shkagot. If you remember, in the second parak, Mishnayot told us about different nidarim that don't take effect. Nidre havai, nidre onsin, nidre shkagot. Now, over there by nidre shkagot is a case where the person forgets something. So, for instance, he takes a nether that he did not eat, and it turns out that he forgot that he did eat. And so therefore there's a nether shkaga because he forgot information when he took the nether. And we would have suggested the same thing over here. That's the way the kol nidre works, is that you preemptively set a t'nai in place that says any nether I take will be nullified, but then you forget about it. And when you forget about it and take the nether, it's as if it was a nidre shkagot, and that's what wipes it out because it's a nether bishkaga. The Ran, on the other hand, says that's not the case here. And it's true, the Gemara itself seems to indicate that that's the case here because it compares the case of Hatarat Chacham, or the failure of the person to be able to matter his own nether, with the case of preemptive T'nai, which says, like the Ran is suggesting over here, it all works because of Taut. And the reason that the T'nai that you take on Kol Nidre works is because it deems all Nidarim that you take during the year Nidre Taut. Now, that has interesting ramifications in terms of a number of items with regards to Kol Nidre. That we know that, for instance, that Kol Nidre has to be done during the daytime. You're supposed to say Kol Nidre prior to Shkia. The reason that is because Hatarat Nidarim is something that is done by Beit Din and can only be done during the day. So Kol Nidre should be prior to sunset. On the other hand, if the way that we say Kol Nidre, it's a T'nai for the upcoming year, it has nothing to do with Hatarat Nidarim. It's all about setting in motion a T'nai for the upcoming year. Why does it have to be during the day? It should be able to be at night. In addition, why do we do it on Erev Yom HaKippurim? And the last question is, why, after we've finished saying Kol Nidre, do we say the following pasuk, V'nislach l'chol adat b'nei Yisrael, v'lager agar b'tocham, ki l'chol ha'am bishkaga? Now, if you look at the Rambam in the Perash Mishnayot, at the end of our parak here, he says that that's part of the formula or the formulation of Hatarat Nidarim. When the Chacham is matir the neder, not only does he say that mutarlach and mocholach, he also says V'nislach. He says this pasuk of Nislach tochol adat b'nei Yisrael. So that's part of a formulation of Hatarat Nidarim. But over here, if we're not doing Hatarat Nidarim, we're just putting the T'nai in place, then why do we need to say that pasuk of Nislach tochol adat b'nei Yisrael? So Rav Soloveitchik suggests that based on our Gemara, that they're functioning in the same way, and that's why all of these items are true. Because Kol Nidre, even though it's a T'nai for all the Nidarim in the upcoming year, the way that that T'nai functions is to make all Nidarim into Nidre Ta'ut, similar to the way that Hatarat Chacham would work. And so since Kol Nidre is functioning just like the Hatarat Chacham, therefore all these requirements are there. Number one, that we do it during the daytime. Number two, we do it on Erev Yom HaKippurim to show the tremendous chesed of Hashem that He is mochul on things that go wrong or when we make mistakes. And in addition, why we add the pasuk, which is a formulation that belongs to Hatarat Nidarim, after we say Kol Nidre about a T'nai. Because the way that the T'nai works is that it makes or deems all Nidarim in the upcoming year to be a Ta'ut. And since they're functioning by the same method, that's why we treat Kol Nidre as if it's Hatarat Nidarim. Even though, again, ways that we have it worded in our Sidurim, we use the Kol Nidre in both ways. We say that it's for the last year and the upcoming year. We try to incorporate both Shitot. But according to that of the Rabbeinu Tam, and that's the favorite Shita by many, which is that it's only about the upcoming year, then this would explain why it has the trappings of Hatarat Neder, even though it's not only a condition or a preemptive way to stop the Nidarim for the upcoming year. Okay, so now the Gemara tries again to figure out what is this position of Rabbi Eliezer. Tashma, Amru lo the Rabbi Eliezer, Umam mikveh shemaleh et hatmeim mitumatam, ein matzil al etorim militamei. Adam shein maleh et hatmeim mitumatam, einu din hu shlo yatzil al etorim militamei. So here we have a piece in the Gemara. The reason that this piece is so complex is because there are so many girsa'ot. We only have one girsa in our Gemara, but The Ran brings down three different Gersaot and three different explanations of this Gemara. Rashi over here brings three different Gersaot and three different explanations. And the Rosh brings two explanations of the Gemara. So that would mean that there are eight different ways to explain it. Baruch Hashem, there are overlaps between their different explanations. So you don't have eight different permutations, but there is overlap between them. What I'll do is I'll go through the three of the Ran and show you where they overlap with the other Shitot, and then I'll bring one of the Rashi's Shitot that doesn't overlap with the others. Which is the Ran in his first explanation, as well as the Rosh in his first explanation, said that the Girs of the Gemara was as following. Uma mikvish shemaleh tatmeim mitumatam, ein matzila letoreim ilitamei. That was it, period. Shma mina lo chaylin. That's all it brought down. And the explanation of that is, when a person who is tamei goes to the mikveh, he becomes tahor. Now, based on Rabbi Elezer's kal v'chomer, that should say that when the status of the person is already determined, here he is tamei, and he goes to the mikveh and makes him tahor, Rabbi Elezer's kal v'chomer would dictate that if a person went to the mikveh, that should prevent himself from becoming tamei in the future. So if he went to the mikveh and then came out of the mikveh, he should be protected against becoming tamei. Obviously, that's not the case. Obviously, that's ludicrous. That doesn't work. So that's what the Chachamim's claim is against Rabbi Eliezer. You're trying to make this kal v'chomer when something's effective once it's already in place. It must certainly be effective prior to being in place. I can show you an example where that's not true. By the case of mikveh, when a person's tamei, the mikveh works. But if a person goes preemptively into the mikveh, that doesn't stop him from becoming tamei afterwards. So therefore, it fails. And now, shma mina lo chaylin. From here, you see it's not chal. Because the way that they want to explain this kal v'chomer over here is that if he went to the mikveh beforehand, he would not become tamei at all in the future. That's what it says, that it's if it never takes effect, it'll never come into effect at all. And therefore, you would conclude over here that the way that the Chachamim phrased their question on Rabbi Eliezer shows you that Rabbi Eliezer intended that it would never take effect at all. Just like if you went to the mikveh, you should never become tamei in the future. So that's the first explanation brought by the Ran and the Rosh. In the second explanation of the Ran, he has the Girsa that is found in our Gemara over here. In explaining that, he says, Ma mikveh shemaleh tatmeim mitumatam, ein matzila torim militamei. Just like we just explained it now. And there, he adds on an additional item, which is that some of the Girsaot actually have another opinion there, which says that the case is slightly different, and I'll explain that in 1 minute. And then he says, Adam, she'ein maleh et ha'tzme'im mitumatam, enu din sheli atzila la'teorim ilitamei. So now, when a person is inside the mikveh, we'll explain it this way, when a person is tamei, he can go to the mikveh and become tahor. But a person, when he's in the mikveh, you would suggest that he can't become tamei. Which means not when he leaves the mikveh, not that when he goes into the mikveh, that will prevent him from becoming tamei in the future, but rather while he's in the mikveh, if he touched something tamei, you would think that that would make him not tamei because he's in the mikveh. We have a gzerat hakatuv that doesn't work. And when you're in the mikveh and you're touching something that's tamei, the person remains tamei and it doesn't protect him over there. Now, Adam, einu malei et ha'tmeim. So when it comes to a person, he's not malei et ha'tmeim mitumatam, which is an Adam tahor. Person that's tahor, shabala, that swallowed a item that was tamei, and hikia, and then he spits it out, adayin tumata aleha. The tuma remains on it. Enu din shlo yatzila la tahora mili tamei. Certainly he should not be able to protect against something tahor becoming tamei. For instance, if he swallowed something that was tahor, and then he goes into a house in which there is a mate, certainly he shouldn't be able to protect what's inside of him from coming tamei. Nevertheless, we say, Matzil, because Tara Blua lo mitama. Alma, from this you would conclude, Leka lemidan, kavachomer ki hai gavno. You can't make such a kavachomer. Dahai ki dinei, vahai ki dinei. Vilav bechumra vekula tali. Has nothing to do with the chumra kula. What they show is, in two directions, we can show you that it has nothing to do with the chumra or the kula. Because, in the case of the mikveh, there you have a kavachomer. If he's in the when he's tamei, he goes to the mikveh, he becomes tahor. Then certainly when he's in the mikveh, he shouldn't become tamei. Nevertheless, he does become tamei. So that we show you, even the chumrah, we don't make that kal v'chomer. And now, with the case of what's called tuma blu'a, the Rosh explains this a little more. Here, the Ran doesn't explain why it's happening, but later on, the Rosh explains how it works. But if a person, for instance, is Tamei, and he swallows a ring that is Tamei, and then he goes and gets sprinkled by the Parah Aduma, goes to the mikveh and becomes Tahor, then when he expels the ring or excretes the ring from him, he is Tahor, and the ring remains Tamei, because the ring was Tamei inside of him. So here, in a case where he was made Tahor, and the ring was inside of him and remains Tamei, then certainly, in a case where he swallows a ring while he's Tahor and the ring is Tahor, now he goes into an Oamet and becomes Tamei, certainly the ring inside of him should become Tamei. Yet, it doesn't become Tamei, it remains Tahor, because it's what's called Tum'ah Blu'ah. Tum'ah that's totally encompassed inside the individual, and it's not affected by Tum'ah then. So it works, he's protected in both directions, meaning that when he becomes Tahor, it doesn't make the ring inside of him Tahor. When he becomes Tamei, it doesn't make the ring inside of him Tamei. But that's a Tzad L'Kulo. And there we still don't say it. We don't make the Kal V'Chomer to say that the ring is Tamei inside of him. So what you see from here is that Rabbi Eliezer, your Kal V'Chomer does not work. Because in both of these cases, we see that the Kal V'Chomer is not exercised, even though based on your logic, it would have made sense to exercise the Kal V'Chomer in both directions, the Kula and the Chumrah. In one case, it would deem the person Tahor when he's in the mikveh and holding on to something Tamei. And in one case, it would deem him Tamei. In a case where he swallows the ring that is Tahor and he becomes Tamei, it should have deemed the ring Tamei. In neither of those cases do we make the Kal V'Chomer. So what it shows you is that this Kal V'Chomer is not the right Kal V'Chomer. Each item will have its own din. And you can't extrapolate from one to the other, because here we had two cases, and neither of them do we extrapolate based on your logic. That's the second explanation of the Ran. Then the Rosh does not like the first explanation that we brought from the Ran and the Rosh, because the Rosh says that had you just had the case of mikveh, then I could have come to the conclusion that the Gemara comes to after the next case, which is, we're trying to prove here whether it's chal or not chal. So the Rosh says you could have two cases of mikveh. One Kal V'Chomer by mikveh would be this. When the person's Tamei, he goes into the mikveh and comes Tahor. Kal V'Chomer, if he goes to the mikveh beforehand, he shouldn't become Tamei when he goes out. And that would suggest Shvamina Lo Chaylin. The other way around, what about a case where he comes Tamei, goes to the mikveh, becomes Tahor? Then, if he's in the mikveh and touching, the way the Rosh describes it, with one hand he's touching something Tamei, on the other side he's touching something Tahor, and he's in the mikveh, he's submerged in the mikveh. So you would think over there that it shouldn't convey the Tumah. Nevertheless, it does convey the Tumah. So that would show you that that's a case where it works and it's Chalin, because while he's in the mikveh, it's still, he becomes Tamei, and the Tumah is transferred from the object that's Tamei to the object that he's holding that is Tahor, and then only after they go in the mikveh will it become Tahor. So in that case, you show that it is Chalin. He says, from that case of mikveh, if you explain the two cases of mikveh, either a case where it's preemptive, he's Tahor, and now if he goes out, he shouldn't become Tamei, or the case where he's submerged in the mikveh, touching something Tamei and Tahor, and it makes the object that's Tahor Tamei, those are two cases where it would show you Chalin and Lo Chalin. So then the Gemara wouldn't need to go on to the Sefer case, which is right after this. So therefore, the Rosh rejects the first explanation that he and the Ran gave, and comes up with a second explanation, which is similar to the Ran's third explanation, and similar to Rashi's second explanation. Rashi just has a strange explanation of this Tumah Blu'ah. He says it's a case where you swallowed the ring, and then excrete it, that it should turn into a Kli Glalin, and based on that, he tries to create a Kal V'Chomer. It's a very strange explanation, so we'll stick with the Rosh and the Ran's explanation. But in this third explanation that the Ran brings, it's the second explanation in the Rosh, and it's the second explanation in Rashi, they actually flip the girsa. They say that first they talk about the case of Tumah Blu'ah, and then they talk about the case of mikveh. And what they want to do is extrapolate from one to the other. The way that it works in this case is, Ma Adam She'ein male et atmei mitumatam, matzila tori militamei. That a person that cannot make something tahor, yet he protects something that's inside of him from becoming tamei, mikveh, shemale et atmei, mikveh which has the power to be mitaher, mitumatam, einu din she'etzola letorim, certainly it should protect against somebody becoming tamei. So that's the way the Kal V'Chomer works in this way, and the Rosh favors this gear, so which says, when it comes to a human being, a person that can't change something from being Tamei into Tahor, yet, when he has an object inside of him, he protects it from becoming Tamei. A mikveh, which has the power to make something Tahor, certainly it should prevent things from becoming Tamei. That means when you dip into the mikveh and you come out, you should not become Tamei at all. And that's Shramina Lo Chaylin. That's why it's not chal. The basis of the Chachamim's question, Rabbi Elazar, shows that it wouldn't be chal at all. And that negates the Rosh's question about there's two directions, because here then there's only one way to explain it. And basically what they're saying is they're drawing from the case of the Adam to the mikveh to say you should make such a kal v'chomer. Obviously we don't make this kal v'chomer, and that's the question of the Chachamim on Rabbi Elazar. Rashi brings a third pshat, which is that this is all parables. And it's a mashal. That the case of mikveh is a mashal for hatarat of the chacham, which is that a chacham that is matir, the hakamah shel the baal, that when the husband goes and is making the neder of his wife, he can go to the chacham to be matir that hakamah. But enu matzil al adam shimidor lo yeh neder. Nevertheless, it doesn't stop or protect the person that if he takes a neder, that the neder won't go into effect. So the hatarat chacham can protect against the hakamah once the person makes the hakamah. But it still can't stop. The Chacham can't prevent you from having a neder going into effect. And the case of Adam is a parable like this. Baal enu yachol afir b'hakamato el yadei Chacham. The husband can only remove his hakama through hatarat Chacham. Enu din she'enu meifer b'nidre ishto kodem shenidra. Certainly, he shouldn't be able to be meifer the nidarim of his wife before she takes the neder. So the way that Rashi learns it is that the case of mikveh is parallel to the case of hatarat chacham, and the case of the Adam with the balua is parallel to a case of the baal that is being made fair the hakama, made fair hakamato. So here, the two stages are that the hakama of the baal can be eliminated. He can go be matir neder through a chacham, yet the chacham can't stop the neder from going into a place. By the person himself, when he goes to be make him the wife's neder, he can't stop that. He can't be made for that. He still needs the chacham. So certainly he can't exercise his right and stop the neder from going into place. Because the chacham, who has the ability to remove the hakama of the baal, can't prevent it from going into place. So certainly the husband, who once he puts hakama in place, needs the chacham to be matir it, he certainly shouldn't be able to do it preemptively. So that's another explanation that Rashi brings. Then the Gemara says, Ema Seifa. What about the Seifa of that? Amar lo the Rabbi Lezer. Imat bilim kli tamei li taher. If you take in a kli that's tamei into the mikveh and make it tahor, yat bilu kli. So here there's a question about the girsa, but it seems that the girsa over here should be kli tahor li shi ki tamei. You should also be able to matbil a kli preemptively to stop it from becoming tamei in the future, litaher. It won't become tamei in the future. Shema mina, chay. From that way that they formulated, it seems like the neder is chal. Because the way they're describing it here is that if it's kli that's tamei, you put it in the mikveh, it becomes tohor. Then you should be able to be yatbilu kli, you will put in a kli, li kishi tamei. When it becomes tamei, that it was already in the mikveh will stop, make it tohor again. But that means it becomes tamei momentarily, and then the mikveh that was there before protects it. So there is a momentary chalut atuma, which would be similar to saying that by the neder that has hafara, there's a momentary chalut and neder. Now you have a stira on the diukim out of the questions that the chachamim are asking on Rabbi Eliezer. Amrei Rabbonon, the Rabbon of the Beit Midrash explained this. Lo kaimi lohon b'tamei de Rabbi Eliezer. The chachamim did not know what Rabbi Eliezer was saying. When he says you can preemptively make for the neder of the woman, they didn't know whether that meant it stops it from being chal whatsoever. There's no maisa neder. Or did he mean it takes effect and then immediately there's a hafara? There is a maisa neder, but the isurim are removed. So therefore they attack him on both directions. My svirilach, what do you hold? Isvirilacha de chaylin ubetelim. If you think that the nedarim take effect and then the hafara wipes it out, tavikli, then the second case that we brought from the seifa, that will be the question on you, because we have a situation which you would think would have your kal v'chomer, and it's clear that it doesn't work over there. So we have a way to negate your formulation of it that way. David kli to yuvtech, then kli will be the question on you. If you think that the preemptive nature of the hafara prevents it from taking effect whatsoever, then mikveh, the case, the first case that we brought, will be the question on you, because over there you see, again, that a kal v'chomer that should have been made based on your logic, and yet we don't make it. And that's a case where it stops it from happening preemptively, or the question is that it shouldn't happen preemptively, and therefore we have a question on you in both those directions. From that, we can't be midayek whether the hafara worked to stop it preemptively from ever being chal, whether it's chal momentarily and then the hafara enters. All right, we're going to stop here. 7 lines down on Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, and the Gemara will continue with Tashma tomorrow, try to find further proofs as to what exactly is the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer over here.